This is an oral history interview with LaFaro. It is March 28, 2006. We're in Pendleton, Oregon. Mrs. Farrow is the Higher Education Coordinator for the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla Indian Reservation. Tell me your full name.
Luella Jane Farrow.
Are you a member of the Confederated Tribes of the Umatilla?
No.
What tribe are you affiliated with?
Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs.
Warm Springs. And how long have you been with the Umatilla tribe in education capacity?
Going on 28 years.
Okay. Very briefly, what did you do first for the tribe in education?
I was an adult basic education paraprofessional. And then I moved into the position of higher education in 1985.
Okay. Okay, what does, first let's go back even further now. You're a graduate of Eastern Oregon College, but you attended Eastern Oregon College. Let's talk about that. When did you go there?
1970 is the first year I attended, through 1973. And we were actively recruited because Eastern had gotten a grant to recruit and retain students. And so I selected Eastern Oregon University. It was Eastern Oregon State College, though.
Was it State College by then?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And what did you study while you were there?
I was going into education.
Mm-hmm.
And worked with, there was about 70 of us on campus at that time. Students from Alaska, all over the country, actually.
Native American students.
Native Americans.
How long you were there?
From 1970 to 1973.
73. And did you live on campus?
Yes, we had campus housing.
You and your husband both attended?
Yes.
During that time. And what do you remember of your time going to Eastern?
I enjoyed it. It was a nice community. They welcomed us, accepted us. I liked the grant. It was a nice community compared to my other choice was University of Oregon, and I didn't want to go there.
You didn't want to live in Eugene?
No.
Because the distance was too far, or two different towns?
Two different towns. I think primarily it was the rain.
Were there other Native students from this tribe in this area that you knew going to campus with you at that time?
Yes.
Who else was going to school at the time?
Gary Sampson, Sr., Clarence Calhoun. There was quite a few students. I don't have my alumni book, but there was one out there.
Uh-huh. So you studied education. What kinds of activities were you involved in with other Natives, or was there a Native American program when you went to school?
Yes. And we had advisors. We formed our own Native American Indian Club, and we had meetings to just to network information. We had we called it our clubhouse. They actually had a place for us on campus.
Where was that?
It was a house that they took down. It's in the picture in the alumni book, but it was a clubhouse with a kitchen, chairs. We could go study. We could go cook. Alaskan students would make jerky there.
Uh-huh.
And it was just a place for us to get together.
And this was actually on campus?
On campus.
Uh-huh. Do you remember who was your advisor or who helped you get that started?
Gary Story was one. Eric Valentine, I think that was his name, was another one.
Were these faculty or were they counselors?
Counselors.
Counselors in the school?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We had two faculty advisors. Mary Davidson was one. She was a history in the history department. And an anthropologist, and I can't recall his name,
mm-hmm.
was another one.
Mm-hmm.
That was our faculty advisors.
And what kind of things did the club do? I mean, you talked about they gathered and they made some of their traditional foods. Did you, was the Native Arts and Crafts Festival going on then?
Yes, it was. And then we also planned our spring powwow. And we started that process. And at that time, Judy Farrell was there, Tiptoe Moses, and I, and Albina. So we decided we would do a traditional meat feast there to share our culture. And so we actually came down, and Judy's grandma, Ada, took us out. We went out and dug roots and took care of it in a traditional way, and then had it on campus.
What did the men do? Did they hunt for
us? Yes, they did.
Did they bring elk and deer?
Yes. That was part of what Jughead and I think Matthew was there, his brother, Gary, and Ben Heath from Warm Springs was there. So they would go out. Clarence was there. It was quite a few.
Maybe. Clarence Cowper?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And did they drum and sing? Did anybody do any drumming for the powwow? Was it from all the various cultures, or?
It was more primarily from here.
Uh-huh.
The Tula tribe. Mm-hmm. Quite a bit, the drum over.
And that was a little early for Armin. He wasn't there yet during that time, Armin Mintler. Okay, so that became an annual event?
Yes.
So did that turn into a tradition? Did the other Native students from the other areas participate?
Yes.
In the gathering and that sort of thing?
It was the sharing. The Alaskan students, they went out and they tasted our foods, learned how we took care of it, and then they would ask us to try their foods.
Mm-hmm.
So they shared. Usually we had a friend that would get dried caribou and dried fish from her family. And when her care package came in, she would share with us.
Uh-huh.
The only thing we didn't quite get to share, and they really tried to have us do it, was seal oil and raw fish. We never get to that. And oil.
Would you have tried it?
Yes,
uh-huh.
Because they tried our foods.
What did they do with seal oil?
They dipped the fish into it.
Oh, I see.
And it's raw.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how they get theirs. It's just dipping it in seal oil.
Then was this more than one day, this event? Was this
was
typically
this
a one
year?
Day?
Well, the powwow,
the powwow
was one day. But we get together and do things at our clubhouse.
Yeah, what kind of things did you do?
Cook our traditional foods, go make fried bread, we wish for luck of me, someone had been elk meat or deer meat. We would cook that up and then share it with whoever came in.
And did you do, how many students did you say Native students were on campus at that time?
70.
70. From all parts of the United States?
Yes, Yakima, Warm Springs, Nez Perce, Umatilla, and Navajo, all Alaska Natives.
Did the club have a name then?
Spill Yai.
Still Spill, that's where it came
yeah.
from.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what it's still called today.
Yes.
So you were there about 3 years. Did you have children when you...
Yes.
Did you start having your boys when you were living there?
Yes. In 1973, Gideon was born.
Uh-huh.
And that Jeremiah was born in 1976.
Now, what brought you back home, back to the reservation?
My husband did his internship in planning in 1976. And then we never did go back. He just started work in the tribal development office as a planner. And so he ended up working, and I ended up at Pendleton High School as a Title IV counselor for high school students. And I was there from 76 to 79. And then I planned to return back to Eastern. So I resigned that position and was getting ready to re-enter Eastern in the winter quarter, but there was an opening for adult basic education, and the director at that time, Kay Fenimore Smith, asked me to apply. So I applied part-time and ended up full-time.
And then when did you move into higher ed?
1985.
Now, what are your, and they've probably evolved over the years, we understand, but basically, what is your job as the higher education coordinator?
Provide assistance to tribal members that would like to go on to college or into vocational training, and also provide assistance with applications for students who would like to go to BIA boarding schools.
Now, the boarding schools are still traditionally, they're still in the kindergarten to 12 grade range?
Ours would be high school.
High school for the most part. So you provide assistance to Umatilla tribal members mm-hmm. who want to attend college. So it's an application process. You are the person that offers guidance and assistance so that they complete the forms correctly and can get to go where they go. How many students do you think that you've sent to Eastern over the years from here?
I would say at least 20 to 25.
Uh-huh. And what do you think the success rate is of those students that went to Eastern?
It has been very good, and that was due to the services that were provided by the Native American program coordinator, who is Jackie Grant. She worked very closely with us throughout the years. They provided Native American higher education career awareness, and that was an annual event. And that began, at the time, because of funding, the migrant program invited us to bring our Native students to Eastern, and they would have college day. Well, our students asked the question, why do we have to be in with the migrants? Because then it got bilingual. Uh-huh. And we had to have my son Gideon translate for them because they didn't understand Spanish. So we started a pilot program for a Native American college day, and that's Nahika. And so that means Native American College Awareness Day. Education, so that's an annual thing.
Now that program still continues at
yes.
Eastern, because I toured students from here through the theater department last year who showed up on that day.
Yes.
April and I made masks.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking April Curtis now. We had a mask demonstration and mm-hmm. we gave theater tours all day long to middle school and high school students from the
yes.
area. So what kind of you've sent about 20, 25 people to Eastern. What sort of, what were some of the majors that people studied and took?
Business administration is one. Political science is another. Primarily those areas. Admin, and then of course yours.
Theater, my strange one. When I interviewed Armin, he said that he studied forestry over there for a year or two when they had that program going. So let's talk more about the interactions. What was Jackie Grant there already before you left campus?
She
I know she studied at Eastern.
She did. I don't know exactly what year she began. But she was there at least 20 years.
Now, was she a classmate of yours
no.
when you went there?
No, I didn't.
She came after you?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And then, what kinds of things, how did you two work together and collaborate as education specialists together for this?
We would provide students for the career fair. She would come out and do college awareness for families, how to fill out admission forms. We would do financial aid form workshops and just help this parent and the student complete the free application for financial aid.
Mm-hmm.
And then also she would help with cover letters for students and letters of recommendation.
So did she take on this program after these people that you were talking about that advised you? Was she the next?
Yes.
And then she held that job until just this last year.
Yes. And she wore a variety of hats. And that they've had to replace her with three different positions.
You mean they've added to her when she took on those other cultural programs as well,
yeah,
as the Native American program.
Yes. She wore a lot of hats. Recently, Eastern received a mentoring grant, Native American Adolescent Mentoring Program, and they work with our Title VII program currently at Sunridge Middle School and provide mentors. And it's working very well. It's in its third year. They did get approved to extend it for another year, but also we'll be looking at a continuation grant. And it works well. A lot of the students are very interested in learning about the tribes. And a lot of the students that they have that are mentors are foreign students.
Yes, I noticed that a lot of them are non-native, in the program, and they're very excited about their work. But I also noticed that the students seem to get a lot of enjoyment out of working with them, too. Plus, of course, they do get their help academically with their work. Have we seen success with that program on the part of the young students that they're helping?
Yes. It's opening their eyes to the fact that, yes, I can go to college, even if they're first generation, and most of them are. The average within the program, 70 to 85 students a year. Our completion rate is at least 15 to 20 students complete their degree programs, associate, bachelor's, and certification for adult vocational training.
It seemed like the graduation dinner last year was huge in terms of the number of graduates that we've had recently. Have you noticed, is some of that due to, is there any influx of additional assistance because of economic development on the reservation now, like the casino and the other resort operations that are going on?
Yes. Our biggest concern, though, right now is meeting the needs of all tribal members, because our ceiling limits have not increased since 1985. One of the few tribes that provide graduate funding for tribal members, and that has a ceiling limit as well. We've been lobbying through the committee, Education and Training Committee, to the board to increase our allocation for scholarships so that we could raise our ceiling limits to meet the rising cost of tuition,
which has risen by the term.
Yes.
At Eastern, it's gone up every single term the last two or three years I was there.
And it's not going to decrease any in the near future. So, we, as to your question earlier, we're finding with our current trend that more students are not eligible for federal aid because now they have parents that are working. And you have to be at the poverty level to be eligible for the Pell Grant, state grants, supplemental grants. So we're finding more and more students that are not eligible for federal aid. However, in our policies, they are eligible for tribal scholarship of $3,000 a year, but that just pays for the tuition, if that.
If that, right.
And books and supplies and fees, because with the higher cost now, they've attached fees, which could really hurt a student in getting into their scholarship money. Each institution is different in what they charge for fees.
Uh-huh. Now, what other kinds of things or activities might you have done in coordinating students with Eastern and, say, Jackie Grant and others? Any particular real success stories or?
Getting them on campus is the best thing, so that they can see what it would be like if they stayed on campus, stayed in the dormitories for a year, like we had to do. We were required to stay in the dorm 1 year.
When you attended
when
Eastern?
I attended Eastern.
Uh-huh.
So we did that, and that was a good learning experience before you could live off campus.
It's my understanding that program is returning. I think it's called the Freshman Experience, and I don't know if it began this year, it's slated to begin next year, freshmen under the age of 21 are being asked to live on campus for their first year.
Yes.
Did you see? Do you believe that people who live on campus that first year succeed better?
Yes, because you have curfews. There's places to study. You have our dorm mothers really took care of us at that time because they would just have to have us in their dorm, and so they took special notice. Really followed our activities and followed us along.
Now, you were already married when you went to...
No.
You weren't married at first when you went there. You met Mike and got married later.
Yes.
Or did you meet him there?
Yes, I met him there.
We're talking about her late husband, Mike Farrell, who was a colleague of mine that I worked with in the early days of his return to the reservation. Tell me about a dorm mother, because... you know, the way they do these dormitory things now, you know, they've got different titles, and I think people would be interested in knowing what that was about.
Our dorm mother set us up in our rooms, let us know the rules and regulations. She would disperse our towels, our sheets, and just take care of us and watch over us. And they were really nice.
You said there was a curfew.
Mm-hmm.
What time was it?
11 in the evenings.
Was it later on weekends?
Yes. And if you had a pass, there was a pass that you could give your parental permission, you could get a key that would let you in or out. Our dorm mother was nice. We snuck out to one time to go get a donut. We tried to sneak back in. We got caught.
Uh-huh.
So she said, next time just knock on my window and I'll let you in.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Were there supposed to be penalties?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
We had, there was a person on the dorm that was an assistant or to the dorm mother. So if we got penalties, then we would have to either give up some of the things that were fun, like going to watch TV. We had to share a room with TVs. We had showers that we had to share. We all ate in the dorm.
So they're not like it is today, where you can have TVs and phones in your room and that sort of thing. Did they have telephones in your room?
We had to go to an outside phone.
A paid phone. And what could some of those penalties have been? You said you couldn't watch TV, so it was sort of like losing some of your privileges, like
yes.
You were living at home.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
They were good about it. They followed the rules, but they were flexible with that,
mm-hmm.
because they didn't want to lose us.
Uh-huh.
So,
uh-huh.
So that was a good experience. I think each student should experience it once in their life.
Did you do any more sneaking out?
No, after that we got permission from our parents to get a key, a pass key.
Now, did that mean that you could come and go?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have to worry about the curfew then?
No.
Uh-huh.
Because we actually had an approved signed statement from our parents saying that we could have a pass, so we could leave and come back in.
Could that be revoked for any reason?
Probably for drinking. They were drinking and partying during that kind of thing.
Now, what were some of the vices, you know, I'm sure it was mainly drinking in your day.
Partying, yeah, that was the main thing. One of the things that was real interesting when we first got on campus is they had the nurse talk to us about birth control.
Was that new? Was that a new program?
I don't believe so, but they wanted us to be aware of it, and we had to go through this mini course with her. Which was good for us leaving home and being young to go through that. And she was very straightforward. I think it's something that girls need to consider for themselves.
And what sort of training did she give you?
She just went over understanding the body, understanding what birth control is, and also having protection, and just stated the fact that you have to be safe.
Right.
So that was good.
do you think that helped overall?
Yes, it did.
What am I trying to say? Was it still a bad deal to get pregnant and be single on campus? Well, could that result in you having to leave school in your day?
In our day, it could have. And it did happen to some young girls that got sent home, which is one of the reasons I chose Eastern, is because the girls that we were sending to the University of Oregon were coming home pregnant. And
you already knew this as a student?
Yes, we observed.
Uh-huh.
In a close-knit community, those things were observed. And as an example, my sister was going to school at Eastern, and my brother-in-law was at Eastern, runs up the senior, he's the chair of Warm Springs now. And she got pregnant when she was in high school, and it was a big stigma then because I came home and they thought I was my sister, so I had to observe firsthand how cruel people could be
about that.
About teenage pregnancy.
Uh-huh.
So it was a major setback. But in today's time, it's a lot different than it was.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You met your husband at Eastern, or
yes.
Did you know Mike before you went?
No, I met him at Eastern.
Uh-huh. And you grew up at Warm Springs then?
In Yakima,
and came to Eastern, mm-hmm. and this is where you met your husband.
Yes,
we're
sir.
Talking about the late Mike Farrell,
mm-hmm.
Who I know as Mike One.
Mm-hmm.
And how did you meet?
We met, we had a, what do they call it? A week that we went on campus early, and they got all of us together, walked us through class scheduling, walked us through our advisors, financial aid. They set us up to meet there, and that's where we met.
Now, did they do that for all students, or we're talking about
Native
the students in the Native program?
Native
they
Americans.
Did that for you? Okay, and so how long before you got married?
3 years. We were together 3 years, and we got married in 1973.
Mm-hmm. And you were still on, were you both still Eastern students
yes.
at that time? Uh-huh. And so what kinds of things did you do?
We applied for campus housing. He was on the GI Bill, being a veteran, and that helped out. The downfall on that is because I was married, the tribe would just pay my tuition and books and fees, and everything had to come from him. So that changed our situation, where I was getting a full scholarship before that.
Now, was there married housing, married
yes.
student housing at that time?
Yes.
Where was that?
It was on the other side of the football field.
Uh-huh.
Student housing there.
See.
And so we stayed there while we were in school. And like I said, he did his internship in 1976 with the tribe as a planner. And then he never did return. I think he only had 2 quarters to go to complete his program.
I remember him telling me, I think just about 4 or 5 months before he left us, that
mm-hmm.
He said 12 credits.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, Mike, you should come with me
mm-hmm.
and get that done.
And he was working on it. He was looking at distance ed. He was going to complete his degree as a distance ed student, and he went to the workshop. He started that process, but he was so busy at his current in his job as a director of French resources
that
he wasn't able to do that.
Now, did other students that from Umatilla come back here and go on to bigger and better things that you were in school with?
Yes, actually. There's some success. One of our classmates just came in this week and met her husband, Gary Sampson,
uh-huh.
senior, and they had 2 children, and they met while they were in school.
Uh-huh.
And she's currently working for Warm Springs. Her name was Valerie Squimpin, and she just came in yesterday because her grandchildren are playing at the bat tournament.
That we're talking about the basketball. What does that mean? Basketball against alcohol and drugs that the tribe sponsors every year during spring break for for public or for school students.
Yes.
You know,
it's Head Start through 12th grade.
12th grade, right. Did you have any, did natives, native students on campus have any support programs of their own?
Yes. We had a men and women's traveling basketball team, and Jughead used to be our coach.
Jughead is her late husband, Mike Farrell.
Mm-hmm.
Did you play on any of the,
yes.
What did you play?
Basketball, and softball, and volleyball. We would sign up in the campus leagues and have our own Native American team,
uh-huh.
Men and women, or co-ed. But we also traveled in basketball and played softball. And we used to challenge the migrant program to basketball or softball, and they would slam us in soccer.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. What would you slam them in?
Basketball.
Uh-huh. But they could kick butt in soccer.
Yes.
What other kinds of activities on campus? Were there any more specialized activities or different activities for married couples on campus than there were when you were single?
No, we all pretty much got together, married and single. It's where we met Jeremiah's godparents, and they were Spanish. And they would babysit Gideon and Jeremiah.
These are your boys?
Yes.
Your sons who are grown?
Yes. And we would get together. They would provide us with a nice Mexican dinner. That's where I started learning how to cook Mexican food. And then we would just share together.
What kinds of things did you do when, I'm sure you were not swimming in money, or anything as a young married couple up there? What kinds of social activities did you do around town?
Mm-hmm.
What was available to you at that time?
Because I was straight from the res, we really never did eat out, and I really didn't start eating Chinese food until I met Chuck. And he started teaching me to eat other foods, so Chinese was about my first one. And like I say, most of us didn't have the funds, and so we started eating pizza, different things that were not normal everyday foods that we have at home, which is deer meat, elk meat, salmon, fish, trout, steelhead, pheasants.
Did you learn to eat Chinese in La Grande?
Yes.
Uh-huh. What, were there any hangout places for college students in La Grande?
Yes, there were. I can't remember their names now, but we used to go eat Chinese at least once a week. The Mexican food. Mel's was a popular place.
Which is still there today.
That was popular.
Was it in the same place as it is now?
Uh-huh. It was. And then once we turned 21, then of course there were the bars.
Mm-hmm.
Pool tournaments.
Tell us about some of that.
When we turned 21, then we were able to go out and we would go, a group of us would go out and play pool and congregate. And the police were even nice to us. We had a friend that got picked up and the police picked him up and brought him home.
Hmm.
It was real interesting.
Your husband was telling me about, I don't know if they closed the place down, you know, because it was, you know, the end of the night,
mm-hmm.
or what happened, but it was snowing really hard,
mm-hmm.
and a policeman came by, and they just asked him for a ride back to campus, and he picked him up,
mm-hmm.
took him back. He claimed that the police were really nice.
Mm-hmm. They were,
and,
which is unusual. Living on a reservation in Madras, Oregon, is a very different aspect, is to be treated fairly and courteously, especially from the police.
You mean as opposed to being, as opposed to living in La Grande, where it was different? Anything else? Go to movies?
We went to movies. They would have campus dances.
did they have rules for those dances then? Mm-hmm. What kinds of rules?
No drinking, no drugs, and we had set times, and because I was a few years younger than Jughead, that's what we would do for recreation, because I couldn't go to the bars.
Mm-hmm. Did you play in, did they have pool leagues for when you started?
Bowling leagues, we did bowling.
Did you?
We had bowling leagues, and joined those, and he was a very good bowler. I wasn't that great, but we had a bowling team. His cousin Charles Parr was there at that time.
On campus.
On campus. His brother Matt.
And Matt Farrell.
Matt Farrell Sr. And they were all veterans, and a lot of the things that we went through with them was dealing with coming back from the war in Vietnam. That was a tough one, dealing with that.
Now, did you, that was a lifelong struggle for your husband.
Yes.
Now, what that did, was that, were those struggles happening to him on campus when he was at school? Did that begin there?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Bob Shippentower was another veteran. Mm-hmm. They all went through the same thing, dealing with the rejection that they received
when they came back.
And the protests. That was a difficult part. It was a lifelong struggle with him. And so
you too?
We did traditional healing ceremonies for him. My grandparents from Warm Springs, my mother and father, his family, and those did help, but it could never take away what he experienced as a medic.
Right.
He could have been a doctor. Dr. Peebus, his God, was ready to pay for his education. But he, after his experience in Vietnam, and the one was the biggest one was when he was trying to save this young man. But he ended up with blood in his mouth and the young man dying. And that one he could never get rid of, that taste and that feeling that happened then.
Right.
The other one was when his friend was ready, he was on countdown to come home, took his place and lost his life. That was another one.
Wow. Yeah, I know he always struggled that way. Now, tell us about the arts and crafts, or the Native Arts and Crafts festivals that went on. They didn't go on forever because it's been a long time since they've had that. Now they do have a powwow still in the spring. But you were there when they were doing these Native festivals then. Can you tell us about that?
We would help coordinate them, get together as a group, then invite artists to promote their work. And we had a Navajo artist, his wife, that would really do a lot, but primarily was to support the artists in our group.
Now, did you bring did Natives come from other schools and campuses to, was this sort of like an invitational thing?
Yes, just to share their work and recognize the great work that they do.
Was a powwow held during that time?
No, ours was a spring powwow, and we put it in conjunction with the traditional East Hunt.
I see. So purely arts and crafts then, that arts festival was.
Yes.
Well, what time of year was that held?
That's a good question.
I don't recall it being spring.
It was in the fall time.
Uh-huh. And what other kinds of things happened during that? They promoted their work, they
it was an opportunity to sell it, to make some funds. Yes, no?
How about now, did the public, the general public, of course, was encouraged to attend?
And they did.
And was it popular?
Yes, it was. I think it was a good way to provide cultural awareness to the LeBrand community.
Do you remember, I'm trying to remember the name of the woman who used to lead up that festival from town every year, or that came and gave support to that. I had heard that there were some local families in LeBrand who used to host Native students in their homes.
There was.
That would travel for the...
Judy Farrell and Tito Moses were housed in a home that they still communicated with the family. Yeah, they did. It was like an exchange.
Yes. And I did another interview with another... a local from LeGrand who said that they hosted three or four women, I think, in their home from, they were from real far away, and they heard from them for years after that, that some of these people made long-term connections out of.
They did. And that was a unique part of it, was some of us stayed in the dorms, some were placed in homes, and that opened their homes up to our students.
Traditional foods, were those served there also during the Arts Festival?
No, primarily we did. We had fried bread.
Mm-hmm. Was fried bread popular in that day?
Oh, yes.
Uh-huh.
It was. That was one of the reasons we would get together at the clubhouse, was to do Indian tacos, fried bread, lakmi.
And what is that? Explain the lakmi.
It's canned salmon. It's like a chowder. And it's like mini dumplings in it. With canned salmon and dried corn is what we used to put in there. And you make a chowder out of it.
A soup.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Is that one... I was just at a memorial at Warm Springs with my dad weekend before last. And I think I saw that in the dinner that they had afterwards.
When I first...
Is that one that's popular with your particular tribe?
Yeah, that's one of the first foods that I learned how to make as a girl. When I first met Jughead, and he would bring me to introduce me to his uncle, Joe Shoeshoes. A lot of the elders that are gone now, his mentors, and he would ask me to make them lakmi and fried bread and dried corn.
Uh-huh.
And they would enjoy that because they hadn't had it since they were a child, and some of them were bachelors. Joe was a bachelor most of his life. I cooked for him. I cooked for Lucian Williams. Some Cash, a lot of them. He would ask me to cook lakmi and fried bread for them.
Uh-huh.
So I don't do that. Or dry corn.
Yeah.
So, and that was part of my upbringing, was the teaching of the traditional foods. So he really liked that.
Was there cruising on the main drag in LeGrand in your day?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, we did that.
What was that? Where did that begin and end, do you recall?
No.
Was it on Adams?
Mm-hmm. I believe it was. We do that because being a veteran, he had a car.
Uh-huh.
Clarence had a car. That's where I learned how to drive a stick shift. It was on Clarence's car. Because he was going out with my friend, who's now gone, but she got her degree in education and was a teacher at Warm Springs. But we used to drag the strip, and she would teach me how to drive. The other thing that we did, as in Spill Eye, is we would enter a float in the homecoming games as a Spill Eye club.
Mm-hmm.
So that was always an activity we got together, was to create a float.
Was there a competition then for the best float?
Mm-hmm.
Did you win? Did Spill Eye ever win?
I believe we may have.
Uh-huh.
We may have. Usually we put that, his brother Matt was always in charge because he would design it.
He was artistic that
yes.
way.
Uh-huh. And so then we would have to come in and fix it together. So.
Under his direction.
Yeah.
So tell us more about this learning to drive. You didn't know how to drive when you went to...
No, I drove automatic, but not a stick shift.
Oh, I see. So you learned a stick shift.
And so we took lessons on planes as well.
Uh-huh.
We tried to sneak over here with his car and everyone, of course, being a small community, knew we had his car in Pendleton.
Uh-huh.
I wasn't sneaking around too much.
So. That was rather obvious.
Yes,
huh?
Yes,
uh-huh.
Too obvious.
Was it difficult to learn a stick shift?
No, not much. Not much about the end of it. He had a stick shift too, so that helped.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say we were pretty brave in those days because we used to come up the mountain without snow tires to come over to visit.
Were there snow tires then available at that
chains,
time?
Chains and snow mm-hmm. tires, but we would just brave it.
Mm-hmm.
Get our half a case of beer and drink it on the way over, and get another half and drink it on the way back.
Now, was the freeway in by the time you went over there?
Yes.
So you didn't have to do the old Cabbage Hill thing.
But we did. He would take me to different areas in Union County just to go out and mm-hmm. look at the country,
mm-hmm.
go fishing where they went, fishing on the Grand Ronde, go up to the mountains just to go out to the country. He really needed to be in the country. I think once he left his country, he wasn't going to leave it again. He had been offered positions, well-paid positions, but once he left, when he went to war, he decided that he was never going to leave his life again.
And we're talking about Michael.
Michael.
Yeah. And so, what kinds of things would you say have been very beneficial over the years? As a higher ed coordinator and your interactions with Eastern now, we've talked about. And we're continuing our oral history interview with Luella Farrow. It's still March 28, 2006. We were talking about other additional programs and things that have been a benefit to our tribe and Eastern Oregon University.
Right now, we've had a long-standing partnership with Eastern Oregon University, and we're in the process of developing a memorandum of understanding with Eastern in areas of recruitment, retention, providing technical assistance with Eastern Oregon University. And it's in the draft stages at this time.
Mm-hmm.
We hope to have that completed by this year.
And what kinds of things do you see coming out of that? What good things will come on these on these joint agreements that you're trying to do? Are we trying to get more students to go there? Or?
Yes, we are. Recruitment, they have a Native American teacher education program that was a model. And we'd like to have more of our tribal members become teachers and administrators with the conception of the Nishiawe Community School. We do have a Native teacher there in social studies, our first tribal member to come back and work in the public school.
Mm-hmm.
We have three students at Lewis and Clark College that are studying for their licensure to be a counselor or be a principal that we put out. And basically we're looking at expanding to middle school once we have space, and then K through 12. So we'll be looking at students that would enter NATEP and come back as teachers or counselors.
So is the idea to expand? We're talking about, part of what we're talking about is the new charter school,
mm-hmm.
Nekyawe Community School. So is it projected that might expand from 9 to 12 to
middle school
and then down to primary grades as well? So become a full comprehensive school.
Yes.
That will staff, hopefully, with
tribal members.
Tribal members who are teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And
administrators.
And I know that Annie Tester, the principal, fully supports that. Hopes to work herself out of a job by having a Native come back and do that. What other things will that bring us?
It'll also provide a site for research on that's being requested by one of our departments, Department of Science and Engineering, would like to conduct research there with their programs. So that's another component.
I see. Do you think, when's that going to take place?
We just had a meeting. It'll come back to committee. We meet twice a month with Education and Training Committee, first and third Tuesdays. We meet next week. We actually just reviewed the draft, and there were some changes that needed to be made to make sure that DMR, Natural Resources Department, other departments had a chance to review it if there was something they wanted to add.
I see.
So we want to make it comprehensive, so it just doesn't address the education department needs, but all needs.
Are you proud of your work in higher education and getting these students to school wherever they might be, not just Eastern?
Yes.
Has it been rewarding for you?
Yes, it has, especially when they complete their programs. It's a dream that they've met.
Even those of us that have taken many years to get it done, like me.
Yes, it is.
Uh-huh.
It's good to see them go on. Right now, we're developing a pilot project, a tribal internship program that we would bring our college students back in the summer as a pilot project to put them in their area of study. So for you, we would place you at Yellowhawk if you applied and came back for a 10 to 12 week session, and you would work in the area of your choice. So you would be a nurse at Yellowhawk, or we might have someone in fisheries that would come back, and we'd develop a scale that would be based on the tribal members' year of study. They'd have to be in good standing. So say we have a freshman coming in, they can make up to $9 an hour, sophomore, junior, senior, graduate. It's a standard scale that we're recommending.
And it would increase based on their standing.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Now, what if I wanted to practice in theater?
Well, to muscle
it. Uh-huh.
And so we want to match them in the area of study. We need a linguist, obviously, to replace more. We have apprentices. We have students that are linguistics computer program. Natural resources is an area. Wild Horse is another place that we need to have tribal members complete their education and look at those positions in
right.
all areas of the tribe, actually.
Right, right. Are there things that we could, that interactions that we could do better in connecting with Eastern? One of the things that I've heard on that side is that as a student, and I've directed some plays and met with some of the administration over there, is that they would like to recruit more Native American students into some of their tougher programs that are kind of non-traditional for a lot of us to get into, like science and math and that sort of thing. Have you heard of any of this, or do you have any interactions with them over recruiting students into some of those harder areas?
Since Jackie has left, we really have not had that much of a dialogue
uh-huh.
with Eastern, except through the mentoring program
okay.
with Melissa Joseph.
Which continues.
It's continuing. Uh-huh.
Yeah. How about women in college or women in science from here? Are we seeing any more of that? Or
yes,
do we have some smart women that are headed off in some of the tougher non-traditional areas?
We have a young lady in biochemistry and biophysics that's looking at being a doctor one day. We have another young lady that's studying to be a veterinarian. We have young women in biology. We have quite a few that are in nursing programs.
Right, right. How about the six, has that been, now that's, we're not talking about Eastern now, that's OHSU. Have we sent anybody to OHSU over there?
Yes, we have. We've had one young lady complete quite a few years ago, and now she's in a master's program for public administration
mm-hmm.
to complete her master's.
Mm-hmm.
But we have had one trouble member complete her bachelor's in nursing from colleges. And she moved on, and she lives away from the tribe. But we've just awarded her a scholarship for a master's.
Cool. Yeah. Uh-huh. Any tales, any other tales of living in Le Grand, of people you've met that have formed great connections between here and Eastern, say, or?
Just that it was a good experience, mm-hmm. and we'd like to see our students experience those positive parts of going to school.
How about you and your finishing school?
I plan on that.
Do you?
I plan on
that. Uh-huh.
It's one of the things that I put in my name and things is to complete that process for myself.
Right, right. So. I mean, I know how I feel over it, that just finally getting that bachelor's degree, and I know I'm not done with school by a long shot, but just it does seem like it takes forever.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and so. You'll probably do something distance ed or
yes.
non-traditional
distance
to make it happen.
Probably distance.
How close, how far away were you from your degree?
27 years.
Really? So about two terms, maybe.
Maybe two terms. Uh-huh. I thought about going back when it slows down here, but it doesn't because our program continues to grow.
Right,
and
right.
So distance ed would be the area I'd look at. And then I'm looking at going on as well to master's.
To a master's program mm-hmm. in education.
Probably. And I'm looking at Eastern for that as well. And possibly adult education.
I see.
So I'm looking. While I'm moving along with the students.
Right.
With myself too.
Keeping up with the program.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, I want to thank you for the interview time. We appreciate that. It gives us great insight into the Native interactions, you know, between Le Grand and here, and I think you've been very helpful to that.
Okay. There's only one piece I want to add to that.
Sure.
I haven't had a chance. There's a sign up by Baker City that talks about a massacre.
Uh-huh.
By the Cayuse Indians.
Yeah.
Have you seen that sign?
No, I haven't.
It was reported to us at a state meeting that there's a sign there about a massacre. And I haven't made it over there to look at, and we've been planning on that for quite a while, and I'm just going to make sure that I make a trip over there to see where it's at.
Mm-hmm. I know that, excuse me, when I interviewed Armand several weeks ago, he talked about a battle that took place in Island City between us and cavalry soldiers, that there's supposed to be a marker for that, too.
Yeah, there's a marker. This one was brought to our attention by a school that did a class of research and put that sign up.
Uh-huh. Well, I tell you what, when you get ready to come over and hunt that down, look me up and let's go and do that
go
together.
Find it. Yeah,
yeah, so haven't well, we haven't been on a road trip forever either.
I know. Uh-huh. I can't seem to break out of this little office.
That's right. Anything else to add on the?
No, I think that's about it.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, Lou. Appreciate your time.
All right.
I think it'll be a great contribution to the overall knowledge of Union County.
Okay.